Now it's time to go to stage and studio.
The Willamette Radio Workshop presents Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol with Sam A. Mowry and Cynthia McGee. Marley was dead to begin with. There's no doubt about that. The burial register was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Scrooge signed it, and Scrooge's name was good for anything on the exchange. The firm remained known as Scrooge and Marley. Sometimes newcomers called Scrooge Scrooge, and sometimes Marley, but he answered to both. It was all the same to him. Once upon a time, of all the good days in the year, on Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. It was cold, bleak, biting weather. Scrooge kept his eye on his clerk, who sat in a dismal little cell, copying letters.
Merry Christmas, Uncle! God save you!
Scrooge's nephew, Fred.
Christmas! Bah! Humbug!
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? You don't mean that, I'm sure.
I do. Merry Christmas! What right have you to be merry? What reason have you to be merry? You're poor enough.
Come, then. What right have you to be dismal? What reason have you to be morose? You're rich enough.
Impertinence.
Don't be cross, Uncle.
What else can I be when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas. Out upon Christmas. What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older, not an hour richer? If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart.
Uncle!
Nephew! Keep Christmas in your own way and let me keep it in mine.
But you don't keep it.
Let me leave it alone, then. Much good it may do you. Much good it has ever done you.
I dare say there are many things from which I might have derived good by which I have not profited. Christmas among the rest. But Christmas time is the only time I know of when men and women seem to, by one consent, open their hearts freely and to think of people below them as fellow passengers, not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good and will do me good, and I say, God bless it.
You're quite a powerful speaker, sir. I wonder you don't go into Parliament.
Don't be angry, Uncle. Come, dine with us tomorrow.
I'd sooner be boiled in oil.
I'm sorry with all my heart to find you so resolute, but we have never had any quarrel to which I have been a party. But I have made the trial in homage to Christmas, and I'll keep my Christmas humour to the last. A Merry Christmas to you, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And a Happy New Year.
Humbug.
Merry Christmas, Bob.
Oh, you're another fine fellow, Bob Cratchit. 15 shillings a week and a wife and family talking of a Merry Christmas. I'll retire to Bedlam.
Then in comes a portly gentleman who stood with his hat off in Scrooge's office.
Scrooge and Marley's, I believe. Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?
Mr. Marley has been dead these 7 years. He died 7 years ago this very night.
I have no doubt his liberality is well represented by his surviving partner.
Liberality, an ominous word.
At this festive season of the year, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comfort, sir.
Are there no prisons?
Plenty of prisons.
And the workhouses, are they still in operation?
Yeah, they are. Still, I wish I could say they all were not.
The treadmill and the poor law are in full vigor, then.
Both are very busy, sir.
I'm very glad to hear it. I was afraid that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course.
Well, they scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind or body to the multitude, sir. A few of us are endeavouring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. We chose this time because it is a time when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices. What shall I put you down for?
Nothing.
Oh, you wish to be left anonymous.
I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me what I wish, that is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I cannot afford to make idle people merry. My taxes help support the establishments I have mentioned. They cost enough. Those who are badly off must go there.
Yeah, many can't go there, and many would rather die.
If they would rather die, they had better do it and decrease the surplus population.
But, sir...
It is enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with other people's. My business occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, sir.
At length, the hour of shutting up the counting house arrived.
I suppose you'll be wanting a whole day off tomorrow, Cratchit?
Sir, it's only once a year.
A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. But I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier the next morning.
The office was closed in a twinkling. Scrooge took his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern. He beguiled the rest of the evening with his banker's book, and then went home. Now, it is a fact that there was nothing at all particular about the knocker on Scrooge's door, except that it was very large. It is also a fact that Scrooge had seen it night and morning during his whole residence in the place, and Scrooge had as little of what is called fancy about him as any man in the city of London. And then, let any man explain to me, if he can, how it happened that Scrooge saw in the knocker, not a knocker, but Marley's face. To say he wasn't startled would be a lie, but he turned the key, walked in, and lighted his candle.
Humbug.
He closed the door and locked himself in. Double locked himself in, not his custom. He put on his dressing gown, slippers, and nightcap, and sat down before the fire to take his gruel. A very low fire indeed for such a bitter night. His glance happened to rest upon a disused bell, and as he looked, he saw this bell begin to swing. Softly at first, but soon it rang out loudly, and so did every bell in the house.
I'm not saying! I won't believe it!
Now the fog came through the door and passed into the room.
Who are you?
You don't believe in me.
I don't.
Why do you doubt your senses?
Because a little thing affects them. A slight disorder of the stomach makes them cheats. You may be an undigested bit of beef, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of underdone potato. There's more of gravy than of grave about you, whatever you are.
Man of the worldly mind, do you believe in me or not?
I do. I must. And why do you come to me?
It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellow men. If that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death.
Tell me, why are you fettered?
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it on of my own free will. And of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you? Or would you know the weight and length of strong coil you bear yourself? It is as full heavy and as long 7 Christmas Eves ago. You have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain.
But you were always a good man of business, Jacob.
Business? Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. Hear me. My time's nearly gone. I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate. A chance and hope of my procuring Ebenezer.
You were always a good friend to me, Jacob.
You shall be haunted by 3 spirits. Expect the first when the bell tolls 1.
Couldn't I take them all at once and have it over with?
Look to see me no more. Remember what has passed between us.
Scrooge went straight to bed and pulled the covers over his head. He awoke to hear the chime striking.
1 o'clock!
Lights flashed up in the room. The bed curtains were drawn aside, and Scrooge found himself face to face with an unearthly visitor. The hair was white, yet the face had not a wrinkle in it, and the tenderest bloom was on the skin. It wore a tunic of the purest white and a lustrous belt round its waist.
Are you the spirit whose coming was foretold to me?
I am.
Who and what are you?
I am the ghost of Christmas past.
Long past?
No, your past.
And what business brings you here?
Your welfare.
A night of unbroken rest would have been more conducive to my welfare.
Your reclamation, then. Rise and walk with me.
The weather and the hour are not adapted to pedestrian purposes.
Come to the window.
Out to the window? But I am mortal and likely to fall.
Bear but a touch of my hand, and you shall be upheld in more than this.
Good heaven! I was bred in this place. I was a boy here.
The school is not quite deserted this Christmas holiday. A solitary child is left there still.
Yes.
As he has been on a great many Christmases.
Ebenezer, dear, dear brother, I've come to bring you home. Home, forever and ever. Father's so much kinder than he used to be. He spoke to me so gently one night that I wasn't afraid to ask him once more if you might come home. And he said yes. We're to be together all Christmas long and have the merriest time in all the world.
Sam, always a delicate creature whom a breath might have withered, but she had a large heart.
So she had, Spirit.
She died a woman and had, I think, children.
One child.
True, your nephew.
Yes.
Your lip is trembling, and what is that upon your cheek?
It is nothing but a pimple.
Scrooge next found that they were in the thoroughfare of a city.
I was apprenticed here. Look, it's old Fezziwig. Bless his heart, Fezziwig alive again.
Ebenezer, Dick, you, my boys. No more work tonight. Christmas Eve, Dick, Christmas, Ebenezer. Let's have the shutters up before a man can say Jack Robinson.
Old Fezziwig and Mrs. Fezziwig, top couple, and nobody a match for them. Such feasting, the roast, the beer, the mince pies.
A small matter to make these silly folk so full of gratitude.
Small?
Why, is it not? He has spent but a few pounds of your mortal money. 3 or 4, perhaps. Is that so much that he deserves praise?
Why, the happiness he gives is quite as great as if it had cost a fortune.
What is the matter?
Nothing particular.
Something, I think.
I should like a word or two with my clerk just now, that's all.
My time grows short quickly. Again, Scrooge saw himself now a man in the prime of his life.
Another idol has displaced me in your heart, Ebenezer.
What idol has replaced you?
A golden one.
Oh, this is the even-handed dealing of the world. There is nothing on which it is so hard as poverty, and there is nothing it professes to condemn with such severity as the pursuit of wealth. Even if I have grown so much wiser, I am not changed towards you, am I?
If this promise had never been between us, tell me, would you seek me out and try to win me now?
You think not.
I would gladly think otherwise. But if you were free today, would you choose a dowerless girl? You, who now weigh everything by gain? Or choosing her, do I not know that your repentance and regret would surely follow? I do, and I release you with a full heart for love of him you once were. May you be happy in the life you have chosen.
Scrooge turned violently away.
Remove me. I cannot bear it. Hold me no longer.
Scrooge found himself once more in his own bedroom. He reeled to bed and sank into a heavy sleep. Restored to consciousness just in time to hold conference with the second messenger. Scrooge was prepared to receive anything between a baby and a rhinoceros. But when the bell tolled and no shape appeared, he was taken with a violent fit of trembling. A blaze of ruddy light streamed upon the bed. He traced the ghostly light to the adjoining room and shuffled in his slippers to the door.
Enter!
The room was hung about with living green, holly, mistletoe, ivy.
Come in and know me better, man. I am the ghost of Christmas present. Look upon me. You've never seen the likes of me before.
Never. Conduct me where you will. If you have aught to teach me, let me profit by it.
Perhaps it was the good spirit's generous, hearty nature that led him straight to the house of Scrooge's clerk.
Whatever has got your precious father, then, and your brother, Tiny Tim, and Martha warned us late last Christmas Day by 30 minutes?
Yes, Martha, Mother. Martha!
Why, bless your heart alive, my dear, how late you are. But never mind, so long as you're come. Sit you down before the fire, my dear, and have a warm, Lord bless ye.
No, no, Father's coming. Hide, Martha, hide! Tiny Tim rode upon his father's shoulders. The child bore a little crutch and had his limbs supported by an iron frame.
Why, where's our Martha?
Not coming.
Not coming? Not coming on Christmas Day?
No, here she is. I can't bear to see you disappointed. Run and hear the pudding singing in the copper, children. And how did little Tim behave in church?
As good as cold and better. He told me that he hoped the people saw him in church because he was a cripple, and it might be pleasant to them to remember upon Christmas Day who made lame beggars walk and blind men see. He's grown strong and hardy, my dear.
I know he is. Such a bustle! You'd think that the goose was the rarest of birds, a veritable feathered phenomenon. Indeed, there never was such a goose cooked in this household, enough for everyone, and the youngest Cratchit steeped in sage and onion to the eyebrows. Aha! The punch and a toast. A Merry Christmas to us all, my dears. God bless us. A sentiment echoed by the whole family, and Tiny Tim last of all.
God bless us, everyone.
Bob held the child's little hand in his as if dreading he might be taken away.
Spirit, tell me if Tiny Tim will live.
I see a vacant seat in the poor chimney corner, and a crutch without an owner, carefully preserved. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, none other of my kind will find him here.
Oh, no, kind spirit, say he will be spared.
What then? If he be like to die, he had better do it and decrease the surplus population. Man, forbear that wicked cant until you have discovered what the surplus is and where it is. It may be that in the sight of heaven, you are more worthless and less fit to live than millions like this poor man's child. Scrooge and his companion left the clerk's house and went into the street, where all was a bustle with preparations. It was a great surprise to Scrooge to hear of a sudden a hearty laugh.
He said Christmas was a humbug, as I live. He believed it, too.
More shame on him, Fred.
Oh, he's a comical old fellow, that's the truth. And not so pleasant as he might be. But his offences carry their own punishment, and I've nothing to say against him.
I'm sure he's very rich, Fred. At least you always tell me so.
What of it, my dear? His wealth is of no use to him. He doesn't do any good with it. He doesn't even make himself comfortable with it.
I have no patience with him.
Oh, I have. I feel sorry for him. I couldn't be angry with him if I tried. Who suffers by his ill whims? Himself, always. Here he takes it into his head to dislike us and won't come to dine with us. What's the consequence? He misses out on a perfectly dreadful dinner.
Oh! Indeed. I think he loses a very good dinner.
By not making merry with us, he loses some pleasant moments, which could do him no harm. I mean to give him the chance every year, whether he likes it or not.
My life upon this globe is very brief. It ends tonight. But there is one last sight you must see. Look here. From the foldings of his robe, the spirit brought two children, a boy and a girl, wretched, abject, frightful. They knelt at his feet and clung to his garment. A stale and shriveled hand had pinched and twisted their features. No perversion or degradation of humanity has monsters half so horrible and dread.
Spirit, are they yours?
They are man's. They cling to me for protection. This boy is ignorance. This girl is want. Beware them both. But most of all, beware this boy.
Have they no refuge or resource?
Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses?
The bell struck 12. Scrooge looked about him for the ghost and saw it not. He beheld instead a solemn phantom, draped and hooded, coming like a mist along the ground toward him. A deep black garment concealed its head, face, form, and left nothing visible save one outreached hand.
I am in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come. You are about to show me shadows of the things that have not yet happened, but will happen, Jackson Spirit. Will you not speak to me? Ghost of the future, I fear you more than any specter I have seen. So I am prepared to bear you company.
They entered poor Bob Cratchit's house. The mother and children were seated around the fire.
At that time, the disciples asked, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" He called a little child and set him in the midst of them. Shall I stop, Mother?
The colour hurts my eyes. It makes them weak by candlelight. And I wouldn't show weak eyes to your father for all the world. It must be near his time.
Past it, rather. But I think he walks a little slower than he used to these last few evenings.
Well, I have known him walk with Tiny Tim upon his shoulder. Very fast indeed. But he was very light to carry. And his father loved him so that it was no trouble. Robert! Come and have a warm.
Oh, I'm sorry to be late, my dear. I went there today. It would have done you good to see how green a place it is. I promised him I would walk there every Sunday. My little child, my Tiny Tim. I'm sure that we shall none of us forget poor Tiny Tim, shall we? Or this first parting that there was among us. And when we recollect how patient and how mild he was, though he was but a little, little child... We shall not quarrel easily amongst ourselves. The phantom moved away. Scrooge followed in its shadow. The city seemed to spring about them and encompass them. The bony finger pointed again, and Scrooge found himself in an obscure part of town.
Look here, old Joe. Here's a chance if we haven't all three met here without meaning it. The charwoman, the laundress, and the undertaker.
You couldn't have met in a better place. They're all suitable to our calling. We're all well matched. Come into the parlour. Come into the parlour.
Every person has a right to take care of themselves.
Oh, you always did.
That's true indeed, no man more so.
Why, then, don't stand there staring as if you was a fray woman. Who's the wiser?
They're not going to be holes in each other's coats, I suppose. Who's the worse for the loss of a few things like these? Not a dead man, I suppose. If he wanted to keep them after he was dead, why wasn't he natural in his lifetime, wicked old screw? If he had been, he'd have had somebody to look after him when he was struck with death, instead of lying, gasping out his last there alone by himself.
Oh, it's the truest word that was ever spoke. It's a judgment on him, it is.
It would have been an heavier one, you may depend on it, if I could have laid my hands on anything else. Open that bundle, Joe. I'm not afraid to be the first. We knew pretty well we was helping ourselves before we met here, I believe. It's no sin. Open the bundle, Joe.
Now, what do you call this? Bed curtains?
Aye, bed curtains.
You don't mean to say you took them down, rings and all, with him lying there?
Yes, I do. Why not?
Oh, you were born to make your fortune, and you'll certainly do it.
Well, I shan't hold back my hand for the sake of such a man as he was, I promise you, Joe. Now, don't drop that oil upon the blankets now.
His blankets?
His else's, do you think? He isn't likely to take cold without him, I dare say.
Yeah, he didn't die of anything catching.
I ain't so fond of his company that I'd loiter or doubt him for such things if he did. Now, you may look through that shirt till your eyes ache, but you won't find a hole in it. It's the best one he had. They'd have wasted it if it hadn't been for me.
Wasted it?
Or buried him in it, to be sure. But I took it off again, as if calico ain't good enough for such a purpose. It's quite as becoming to the body. He couldn't have looked uglier than he did in that one. Is there not a man, woman, or child to say a kind word for this wretched creature? Who is it they speak of?
The phantom pointed forward until they reached the iron gate of a churchyard, walled in by houses, overrun by grass and weeds, choked up with too much burying. A worthy place. The spirit stood among the graves and pointed down to one.
Before I draw nearer to that stone you show me, answer me one question. Are these the shadows of the things that will be, or are they the shadows of the things that may be only? Men's courses will foreshadow certain ends, but if the courses be departed from, surely the ends will change. Say it is thus with what you show me.
The spirit was immovable as ever. Scrooge crept toward it, trembling as he went, and following the pointing finger, read upon the stone of the neglected grave his own name, Ebenezer Scrooge.
No, spirit, no! Oh, spirit, hear me. I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I must have been. Why show me this if I am past all hope? Good spirit, say that I may yet change these shadows by an altered life. Oh, tell me I may sponge away the writing on this stone.
Scrooge held up his hands in supplication and saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost.
My bed. My room. The bed curtains, they are not torn down. They are here. I am here. The shadows of things that would have been may be dispelled, and they will be, I know they will. I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all year. I will live in the past, present, and the future. The spirit of all three shall strive within me. Oh, Jacob, Marley, heaven and Christmas time be praised. I say it on my knees, old Jacob, on my knees. The church bells ding dong, oh glorious! The sunlight, heavenly sky, jovial cold, fresh air, oh glorious, glorious, and again glorious! Hello there, boy!
Aye.
What's today?
What?
What's today, my fine fellow?
Oh, it's Christmas Day.
Christmas Day, I haven't missed it. The spirits did it all in one night. They can do anything they like, of course they can. Hello, my fine fellow.
Hello.
Do you know the poulterers in the next street but one?
I should hope I did.
What an intelligent boy. A remarkable boy. Do you know whether they've sold the prize turkey that was hanging up there? Not the little one, the big one.
What? The one as big as me?
What a delightful boy. A pleasure to talk to. Yes, my buck.
It's hanging there now.
Go and buy it.
Okay.
No, I'm in earnest. Go and buy it and tell him to bring it here that I may give directions where to take it. Come back with the man and I'll give you a shilling. Come back with him in less than 5 minutes and I'll give you half a crown. I'll send it to Bob Cratchit. He won't know who sent it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim.
Scrooge went to church and walked about the streets and watched people hurrying to and fro and patted children on the head and found that everything yielded him pleasure. In the afternoon, he turned his steps towards his nephew's house. He passed the door a dozen times before he had the courage to go up and knock.
Fred, it is I, Uncle Scrooge. I have come to dinner. Will you let me in?
Let him in. It's a mercy he didn't shake his arm off. Wonderful party, wonderful games, wonderful happiness. But Scrooge was early at the office the next morning. Oh, he was early there. If he could only be there first to catch Bob Cratchit coming late.
Hello? What do you mean by coming here at this time of day?
Oh, I'm very sorry, sir. I am behind my time.
Yes, you are. I think you are. Step this way, sir, if you please.
It is only once a year, sir. It shall not be repeated. I was making rather merry yesterday, sir.
I'm sure you were. I'll tell you what, my friend. I'm not going to stand for this sort of thing any longer. And therefore, you leave me no recourse but to raise your salary. A merry Christmas, Bob. A merrier Christmas, Bob, my good fellow, than I have given you for many a year. I raise your salary and endeavor to assist your family. We'll discuss your affairs this very afternoon over a bowl of Christmas punch. Now make up the fires and buy another coal scuttle before you dot another eye, Bob Cratchit.
Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that truly be said of us and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us everyone. Thank you for joining us. Our production was recorded by Mark Rose, adapted by Cynthia McGeehan, and directed by Sam Mowry. For more information on the workshop, please visit us at www.radiowork.com. Until next time, you remain who we think you are.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.